Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Well, it's been a relatively quiet week on the Brexit and Ireland front, but there were one or two things happening. Joined now on the phone, as per usual, by Peter O'Dwyer, the senior business reporter with the Times Ireland edition. Peter, good evening. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Ger.
A relatively quiet week. I suppose the big thing in relation to Ireland was the announcement that maybe the EU would look at changing the wording of the backstop, or maybe they'd look at it again, and that seemed to make things a little brighter for Theresa May.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, a relatively quiet week, but perhaps it might prove to be a very important one and might just set the groundwork for how this is going to go for the remainder of the year. As you say, I suppose a couple of weeks ago we heard talk that the EU might look at renegotiating the backstop because of the deadlock, I suppose, that negotiations were at. The EU's version of how the backstop would work was dismissed out of hand by the UK, and vice versa. The UK's version was dismissed by the EU. So it seems like they're going back to the drawing board. This week, the Varadkar said that Ireland would be quite happy to be flexible on the wording of the backstop, and that really Ireland didn't care about the technicalities of it and the detailed legal text, that all Ireland wanted was the outcome, that there would be no hard border. So he says he has got no problem with the wording being revisited. Later in the week, I suppose, Michel Barnier then followed up in a piece that was published in a number of newspapers all right across Europe on the same day. And again, it was quite a conciliatory tone that he struck within that piece. And he said that the EU would be prepared to compromise. He said that they would be ready to improve the text of the proposal with the UK. What that means in practice, I suppose, is still very unclear. Some people have interpreted it as saying that the structure and the actual substance of what is in the backstop agreement from last December could be amended. Others, and this is probably more likely, see it as just a rewording to depoliticise it and make it a little more amenable to Theresa May and to the UK in general. So that is probably the more likely scenario here, but it was an open door, I suppose, that Barnier left in that article.
And we know that Mrs. May cut short her trip to Italy to go and see President Macron in France. And was there anything significant in that we should know about?
It's hard to know. Journalists have been asking Downing Street over the last 48 hours or so what exactly was achieved in that meeting, and they are not particularly forthcoming with the detail of it, which you would imagine means that not very much was achieved at all. Essentially, this is part of Theresa May's plan to go above the head of the Commission and Michel Barnier, and to go to the heads of state with anybody that she thinks might be somewhat amenable to her plan, or at least somebody who hasn't publicly dismissed it out of hand. It seems as if she didn't have much success. She was warned in advance by numerous people that Macron wasn't likely to break ranks and to undermine Barnier's position in any way. Downing Street and the French government released some footage where there was no sound in it. There was an awful lot of head nodding going on. Right. They all looked very amenable, but it doesn't look like there was much actually achieved from the UK's point of view in that.
On yesterday's Sunday Times, there was a story relating to the Trade Secretary where he said that a no deal is looking ever more likely.
Yes, it was interesting. Liam Fox, the Trade Secretary, as you say, he pushed a no deal Brexit now at odds on. He said it was 60-40. It had previously in his head been 50-50, but he blamed the intransigence of the EU for the worsening prospect of the UK crashing out without a deal. I suppose it's quite striking that senior minister in the UK government would say such a thing, given that in the referendum campaign there was this issue of Project Fear, that anybody that raised concerns about certain aspects of what Brexit might mean were kind of shouted down as scaremongering. Last week as well, the Bank of England, Mark Carney, the governor there, said that the chances of a no-deal Brexit were increasing, and that they were, I think he said, uncomfortably high. And he received a similar backlash even at this stage. The idea of Project Fear kind of cropped up again, and he was basically told by a lot of people to be quiet and to stop scaring people. So then to have a UK government minister come out with the same thing was interesting. It seems to be maybe a new tactic on the UK's point, that they feel like their last bit of leverage is to say, right, well, we're going down, you're coming with us, kind of thing.
Right, okay.
To scare the EU into thinking that, you know, which of course would be true if there were no deal, it would be bad for the EU, it would be awful for Ireland. So perhaps it's a little bit of leverage and they're trying to put it in stark terms that they think that they will be leaving, and to focus the minds of the EU leaders as to what that would mean.
All right. I'm asking this question because it's relevant in relation to the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. It's silly season. The politicians aren't really at, well, they're not in their offices in Westminster, but is there any talk or any ripples at all of a heave against Theresa May in the next couple of months when people are back to work in September and that? And I'm asking that because it's probably only going to be with a change of government in the UK that the Irish issue will be able to be solved, or have a better chance of solving it, maybe, I think is the way people look at it. Any rumblings?
I think there's always constant rumblings in the background, but I don't think that the chances of it happening are actually that high.
Okay.
Largely because it's such a poison chalice. Very few people want that job. Plenty of people want to tell Theresa May how to do her job, but very few would actually like to be in the hot seat, I think. So perhaps Boris might try and rally the troops again and have another go. Jacob Rees-Mogg is always trying to unsteady Theresa May, I suppose. But her position is very unusual in that it's very tenuous, it's very fragile, but at the same point, because it's such a difficult job, it's actually quite secure because nobody really wants it.
All right. Poison chalice, as you say. All righty. For a relatively quiet week, we knocked a fair bit out of that. Peter, we'll talk to you again next week on the programme, and thanks as always for joining us this evening. That is Peter O'Dwyer, who is the Senior Business Reporter with the Times Ireland edition. Let's go to something a little less serious right now. Let's go and take a listen to a Eurovision Song Contest memory. I laugh when I do this because you'd swear I was a Eurovision fan. But there you go. This particular week, we're going back as far as 1972. It was the 17th Eurovision. It was held on the 25th of March that year, and it was held at Usher Hall in Edinburgh. Now, if you were listening a number of weeks ago when we did the 1971 Eurovision Song Contest, you would know that Monaco won it. So why were they in Edinburgh? Well, I'll tell you why. Because Monaco did win 1971, but the Principality was unable to meet the demand of hosting the event, and therefore it was decided to bring it to Edinburgh. Now, that particular year, 1972, which was won by Luxembourg, a lady by the name of Vicky Leandros, a beautiful voice Vicky Leandros has, she won with a song called Après Toi. Ireland's entry was called Chiol an Grá, Music of Love, and that was sung by Sandy Jones. She got 72 points on the night. That gave us 15th place out of 18th. So let's take a listen to Ireland's 1972 entry into the Eurovision Song Contest, Chiol an Grá, Sandy Jones. It is live on ERA on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Shall know and shoot them, then share the heel and cure them, go. He'll on a car, an tún is tú marún sin ceol an rá.
That's a lady by the name of Sandy Jones, and she sang the 1972 Irish entry to the Eurovision Song Contest called Ceol an Gró. Let's have a look and see some of the events that were happening down through the years that would affect Ireland or in relation to Ireland. It was back on the 6th of August in the year 2000 in Waterford, a team of six men, five of them former international boxers, skipped their way into the Guinness Book of Records by smashing a 24-hour relay skipping record. What a fun event that must have been. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the 7th of August, marks the anniversary of British Airways began a training program for crew of the Concorde aircraft at Shannon Airport amid speculation that the supersonic plane could be back in the air within the next number of weeks. That was in 2001. It was back in the air, I think, for one or two flights, and that was pretty much the end of it then. On the very same day, 2001, family and close friends gathered in the Spanish resort of Alicante for the cremation of one of Ireland's best-loved actors, Joe Lynch. Wednesday, the 8th of August, marks the anniversary of the Spanish Armada being defeated by the English, with some Spaniards slain upon reaching the coasts of Ireland and some survivors remaining. It happened on the 8th of August, 1588. And I'll be telling you more and doing more on the programme in relation to the Spanish Armada over the next wee while. 1923, on the 8th of August, the Civil Guard is renamed the Garda Síochána in Ireland. And in 1953, on the same day, the Library of Alfred Chester Beatty, containing his unique collection of Oriental manuscripts, opened in Dublin. Thursday is the 9th of August, and it marks the anniversary of the first siege of Limerick. 1690 was the year. It commenced when William of Orange encamped just outside the walls of the old city with an army of about 26,000 men. 1971, on the 9th of August, internment was introduced in Northern Ireland. And in 1979, the first Vietnamese boat people arrived in Ireland. Friday, the 10th of August, 1791 was the year the House of Commons proposed that all unregistered priests in Ireland should be branded on the cheek. This was later abandoned, thankfully. 1984, on the 10th of August, John Tracy won a silver medal in the marathon at the LA Olympics. 1998, car clamping of illegally parked cars was introduced in Dublin. And since that very day, it's been a very contentious issue. On the same day, 1998, after 26 years on the air, Gay Byrne confirmed that he would quit his RTE morning radio programme at Christmas and it will give up the Late Late Show the following June. I remember it well. Saturday is the 11th of August, and in the year 1927, on that date, after the Free State general election on the 9th of June, De Valera and Fianna Fáil entered the Dáil as the largest opposition party. The Cosgrave administration brought the Farmers' Party into government. The Electricity Supply Board, the ESB, was established to control the Shannon hydroelectric scheme and take over all existing projects for the electrification of Ireland. It was in 1979, disaster overtook the Fastnet Challenge yacht race when the biggest ever fleet of 303 vessels was caught in a vicious storm. 17 people lost their lives in that. And finally, we go to next Sunday, which is the 12th of August, and two events to tell you about. 1796, Kilmainham Jail in Dublin received its first prisoners. And in 1998, a freak twister ravaged Martinstown in County Antrim. No injuries or fatalities were reported, thankfully. There we go. Just a quick look at some of the things that happened down through the years on this particular week in the history of Ireland. Let's do a very quick break. After that, we're going to be paying a visit to a very beautiful village in the hills outside Estepona.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
For the latter part of the programme, I am out and about, and I'm standing on a terrace overlooking the village of Huenahuatzil, which is, if you go into Estepona and turn right, if you're coming from the San Pedro direction, you travel for just over 30 kilometres on a beautiful scenic route, and you end up in Huenahuatzil. And I'm standing beside the mayor of the village at the moment, and the mayor's name is Miguel Herrera. Thank you for the welcome to this beautiful village. And I'm here because on Wednesday evening, you opened a fabulous art exhibition. Tell me about that, please, if you would, and what it's called.
The exhibition is called Encuentros de Arte, which means art meets, which we invite artists from all over the world to come to Canal Guacil to do a project basically on the streets. During the 2 weeks of the Encuentro de Arte, which is from now until the 15th of August, people can see all the artists working on the project, which will be exhibited the 15th of August. And also at the same time, inside the Contemporary Art Museum, we have several exhibitions. Part is our own collection of Encuentros de Arte. Another part is by some of the artists which are here in the village.
I'll talk to you about the art exhibition in just a moment, but tell me something about the village, how many people are living here geographically for anybody that would know the area exactly where we are, and just how life in general gets on here.
Well, we are a small village of 500 people in the village. We are in the middle of the Genal Valley, which is just behind Estepona. Basically, this is a farmer's area. But now, since 24 years ago, we're trying to develop a way of living here, because most of the people left from 50 years ago until now. We have lost nearly 75% of the population of the village, and now through culture, nature and art, we're trying to develop and open new opportunities for younger people.
So tell me about the types of artists that will be here for the 2 weeks of the festival.
Well, it's a wide range of artists. Some of them are going to do some sculptures, some of them are going to do photography, but in a different way, which they involve the village into the project, or even people who want to come to the village. But basically, most of it's going to be street art for the 2 weeks.
Okay, and in terms of visitors, this has been running since 1994, so what numbers are you expecting in the two-week period?
Well, we are expecting to get between 7,000 to 9,000 people to come over. Actually, we need the people to come over because we need to demonstrate and say in small villages we can do big things.
In terms of putting this together, it's obviously an expensive exercise. So how is it funded?
Well, unfortunately, this year we have bad news, because always being found by Junta Andalucía, the town hall and Diputación, we had the money from Junta Andalucía, from the town hall, but this year Diputación, from reasons, political reasons, they don't want to support us. And since 2 days ago, we had to create a crowdfunding to raise the money to survive.
Okay, and if somebody wants to assist you with your crowdfunding, how do they do that?
Well, in the website goteo.org, it's the information here on the website from canalguacil.es. Also, it's all the information. Basically, it's we're trying to raise between 30 to 80,000 euros. We have 30 days to do that, and I think people will help us because people believe in culture.
This program is mainly an Irish program, and people might be wondering why I'm here, because there are no Irish artists here at the moment. But that doesn't mean that you haven't had in the past. Have you had?
Yeah, we have had people, I think, from all over the world, Irish. And actually, there are, I think, one family, Irish family, living in the village.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We might have a word before we go if we get a chance. I suppose it's something that you would welcome anybody who might be Irish or English or Scottish or whatever. You'd welcome them. And this happens every 2 years, not every year. Am I correct?
Yeah. The Encuentro de Arte happens every 2 years, but the whole year round we have different activities. We have artists coming over to do either exhibitions or different projects, so it's always welcome. We're open to projects, we're open to opportunities, we're open to people.
And how did it start? Has there always been a link between the village and the world of art, or is it something that just was thought up and off she went?
Well, it was a mad idea from the mayor at the time, which he had to create a different project for the village to stop people leaving, as I said before. And since then, we've been working really hard to get it going.
In terms of keeping it going, are there challenges that you have to overcome? I know funding this year particularly, but what else would you be having to look at?
At the moment, we're trying to concentrate on trying to get this going, because I think it's one of the best cultural projects which exist in Spain. It's unique. What we've done, it's considered unique. In fact, the Financial Times, the New York Times, CNN, they've been supporting us in the past. We've been recommended to Michelle Obama when she came over to the coast. So it's been hard work behind it. And now I think the best way to win is to invite people to come over and to see exactly what's happening, and then to help us with the financing the project.
And is there a website that people can go to take a look at the village and maybe what they can expect?
Yeah, there are two websites. One is the name of the village, generalguacil.es, and the other one is pueblomuseo.com.
This is going to be happening until the 15th of August, so we encourage people to come along if you want to have a lovely scenic drive and come and see a beautiful village. It's the village of Generalguacil. I want to say thank you very much to you, the mayor. Miguel, thank you for inviting me down.
Thank you so much to you for coming over, and I'll see you all here.
Couldn't help me explain. I know you're scared, it won't be the same, but promise you I'll always remain. Best of me is in by your side, best of you I just can't decide. You seek the world since you're traveling at heart, 1,000 miles couldn't tear us apart. So please don't go, my heart grows cold. What's wrong, but there's no one to blame. I find it hard that we left it so well. It's just a break, not an end in itself. So naive that I thought I'd be fine. You're coming home 8 months time. And as they said, it will make us so strong. But just a day is a day too long. So please don't go. My heart grows cold. But never off my mind. And now I know the heart is far. I was just watching you go. And please don't go. My heart grows cold.
That's a great track from The Coronas. Take us back a couple of years. That's a song that's called Listen Dear. Well, that's it. That's our lot for today on Live on Era. I do sincerely hope you have enjoyed listening to the programme. Can I say a big thank you to everybody who contributed today to the programme. Thank you to my colleagues here at Talk Radio Europe for their continuous promotion of the programme and support of it as well. Thank you as well to Jose Antonio Sierra, our Spanish-Irish cultural liaison and consultant on the programme, who's been giving me wonderful stuff. and we will be talking to him in the next couple of weeks. There's a couple of things we have to do first before we do that, but you will be hearing his voice and finding out a little bit about his connection to Ireland and to Spain. He's obviously Spanish. So thank you again to Jose Antonio. Thank you as well to those of you who contact the programme or the radio station about the programme. And if you'd like to get in touch with me directly, my email is ger@talkradioeurope.com. That is it for today. I'm going to leave you with a lovely piece of music, or as much of it as we can squeeze in. A couple of reels from Colin Nee, and Jack Talty is on the piano on this one, from an album which is titled Between the Jigs and the Reels. I'm going to play this for you as we say goodbye. Look after yourselves, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you back here next Monday for another Live on Era on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Bye bye now.